Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now. On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. How are you today? You're at the spot, the place, the location where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. I've been looking forward to this interview. We have Amy S. Peel. She just came from Switzerland. She's going to tell us a little bit about her vacation, but she is an award-winning author of an organ transplant series, Mysteries with a Mission, and a Side of Humor. She is also doing some great theater work. She goes and does amazing talks, but her compassion and what she learned from nursing and how she was able to springboard that, and some of the stories, the backstories that she has told me about organ donors, the transplants, and the experience and how it's changed her life will definitely warm your heart. So we are going to welcome her here to the show today, and we're going to have a great conversation. How you doing, Miss Amy?
I'm fine, Miss April. So good to see your beautiful face, and I'm really excited to be with you today.
Well, I am. I've been looking forward to this because, as I told you, I had two coworkers, and one came in one day and told the other one that she needed a kidney, and the other one volunteered. And God have it, they were a perfect match.
Wow.
Different ethnicities. They were about 30 years apart in age. And the one that needed the organ, bless her heart, got sick. The other one waited 8 years. 8 years. Now, you know, folks would have changed their mind by then to give her that kidney. But what I also found fascinating by the story is the emotional attachment that these two shared. And then the emotional discord that happened. So we're going to talk to you about that and your work in the industry. Tell my brains a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Okay, my friend. Well, I am a nurse first, and I have been a nurse 50 years. So just had our 50th nursing school reunion, and thank God, alive and kicking. Started in Chicago. That's my hometown. Lived there 31 years. Started in transplant at University of Chicago, 71. I'll fast forward through that. Started taking care of these patients that had a kidney transplant, never heard of it. And I got bit by the bug. Ended up being a transplant coordinator there, talking to donor families at the worst horrible time in their life, sacred space. And then I organized all the events that culminated in organ donation, kidneys, livers, hearts, lungs, corneas. And I just got carried away, and 35 years later, I retired. But during that course, while I was in Chicago, I live outside of San Francisco now, I also went to Second City and took a year of improv, because the work that I did during the day and night was pretty hard, and it was a soul really enriching and saddening. At one point, I'm in someone's space that's just lost their 18-year-old son to a car accident, motorcycle, and the next time I'm calling somebody and telling them that they have a kidney and they can come and get it. So it was definitely a yin-yang thing, and the satisfaction of calling and seeing these people rejuvenate, and the sadness of being in a sacred space. It was really just a gift. And I don't know actually how I handled it all, but I just showed up and did it. I guess I think I've got the gift to be in.
You do have a gift.
And I just did it. I honored it. So that's kind of the short and long of it. I got involved in national programs and all those kinds of things. And then I retired 10 years ago from the biggest transplant program in the United States, University of California, San Francisco, where I oversaw a team of 120 staff plus doctors, and we performed 600 solid organ transplants every year. Kidneys, livers, hearts, lungs, pancreas, islet cells. So it was the big show. And once I retired, I decided I had been writing prior to that. And my mother, God rest her soul, always said, you don't retire from, you retire to.
Right.
So I'd been taking writing classes along the way when I could. And my first murder mystery came out in 2017. And I decided to kill the people I didn't like at work and use their organs for transplant. And it was it's fiction, so you can do anything you want, fiction. And then I ended up writing three books. They've done well. They've won awards. They were bestsellers. And, I just finished my very first romantic comedy and submitted it to my agent in August. So, yeah, it's really interesting when you say yes and a door opens, and then you say yes and another door opens. Have the courage to have said yes. Sometimes it's really scary that my life has evolved. I even met my husband through transplant. His mother was one of my students. We've been married 37 years, known each other 39. So you just don't know when you follow your passion where it's going to be.
Well, you know, I give you your flowers right now because you are an earth angel. To even be able to be in the position and the mindset to facilitate this type of thing, because it would have been a drain on, you know, we had a conversation in the green room. I'm a marshmallow when it comes to certain things. And again, you saw three sides. You saw the unfortunate side, you saw the joy, but then you also had to have a life balance. You know, you had to figure out, where am I? You know, some situations you have to be numb in because you have to deliver bad news, but others, you know, you're excited about what happened. It's just a lot. It's a lot. I want to touch on that just a little bit, because, and then we'll talk about all the other exciting, wonderful things that you're doing. But I wanted to talk on that because so many people don't offer their organs. I'm an organ donor. I'm also one for stem cell research. Not only can you offer your organs for transplant, but you can also offer them for research. And then I look at some folks, and I say this with love, that I know my neighbor's husband passed, and she donated several of his organs. And baby, the life that he lived, drinking and smoking and all that kind of stuff, I wouldn't want that transplanted in me. How do they go about testing to see if they are viable and if they are, you know, healthy enough to go into somebody else?
They do a lot of blood tests and all kinds of screening before they even take any organs. So they get a call all the time. There's 24/7 call. They get a call for whatever, the donor. And then they go over the history with the nurse. Patient's brain dead, so they're artificially maintained on a ventilator. And they ask questions and they draw blood, they do imaging. So they don't accept it just blind. They have to do a complete review. So much so, even if it looks good on paper and you've seen the x-rays and the MRIs and the blood looks good, they don't take the organ, say the liver, or the heart, or the lungs, but the kidneys you can leave in. You don't have to take them out if they're not working, just leave them in. But as it goes, it's an example. So if you have a liver donor or donor, and the team goes and does a opens the donor and looks, does a visual, looks good, starts taking out the liver, making sure it's okay. On the other side, at the same time, they bring in the recipient, potential recipient, and they don't start doing anything until the doctor in the OR at the donor hospital says, okay, this is a good liver, you can start. So the timing is such that until there's visual and they look at it, and then they put the patient who needs the liver under anesthesia and start taking the old liver out because it's diseased. And by the time, because it takes a lot of time, by the time the donor doctor comes back with the team and the healthy liver, the old liver is almost ready to take out and the new liver is ready to be put in. So the timing has got to be like perfect. Mm-hmm. And so that's it. And the older that we're all getting, but some people take better care of themselves than others. You'd be surprised. People can be smoking. If they're smokers, we wouldn't touch the lungs, but who knows, their kidneys could be good. Everything's evaluated very carefully and check, 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 check. So it's really well done so that, you know, by the time they're putting it into a recipient, they know that it's got a huge chance of success of function.
Okay. I want to ask you a couple more questions. And people will ask this question. They'll say, oh, well, you know what? This is a big business as well, because there is a cost associated with that. Do the donation family, the family that's donated the organs, are they compensated in some kind of way? I mean, are their bills taken care of? Are they?
Anything that has to do with organ donation is paid for after the patient's declared brain dead and the family donates the organs. So from that point on, the family does not incur any costs at all. You can't buy and sell organs in the United States. You can in other countries, just so you
Oh, yes.
know. And I'm telling you, we would get recipients coming back to ask us to follow them up and say, where were you transplanted? And some in China and different places. So yes, it's alive and well in the very poor countries or people who want to do that. It's illegal in the United States. What they do is if the living donor, say, because we need living donor kidneys and living donor liver donors, if that patient is a good donor, then their expenses are paid for them being worked up and for the time after when they go to recover. So there is money to take care of them after they've made this type of a donation, not forevermore, but during that time. So that costs, but it's and Medicare pays for kidneys and livers and hearts and lungs, as well as private insurance too. So it really depends, but no, it's not a small price tag any way you look at it because of
Right.
what happens to making sure that it's successful.
And this is just a side note, Brains. This has nothing to do with Amy or the work that she's done, but I have worked with individuals with human trafficking. And, it's not just the sex trade, it's not just the labor. Sometimes it is of organs. So we want to definitely consider being an organ donor. What does ethnicity have to do with it? Because I'm going to tell you, black folks, going to tell you right now, whatever the good Lord gave you, that's pretty much what they want you to die with. They don't want to give you organs. They don't do a lot of bone marrow. Maybe things have changed, but just historically, and from what I've experienced, is they don't even really want to give a lot of blood at the blood drive. So, you've got, again, my girlfriends, one was, Filipino and Hispanic, and the other one was Caribbean. Two, I mean, very vast different things. So a lot of times people say, oh, we're not connected. But we are connected because, again, these people had different upbringings, different foods, different lifestyles, different DNA, but their organs were a perfect match. That's amazing.
They don't look any different. I'll tell you, a kidney from any ethnic group, but you wouldn't, if I just showed you a kidney, you would never be able to tell me whether it was from a black person, a white person, a Caribbean person, because it's a kidney. It's a kidney. So yes, we do have ethnic differences for sure. And there's not as many black donors, African American donors, as there are white donors, but that's changing a little. And we have a lot of people on the wait list who have kidney failure who are African American. And so it's a conversation, and plus seeing how your parents were raised or their parents were raised, there's these taboos that people think,
Yes.
oh, my body alone. I'm leaving with everything I came. And that's okay, because that's their belief system. Today in the United States, regardless of color, race, or creed, every donor, every death in a hospital, the people have to be asked because it's a law. It's a regulation through Medicare that the family at least be given the option, because it's the last thing you're going to be thinking about. God forbid your 18-year-old son's been hit in a car accident. You're not going to be thinking about organ donation at
Right.
all. So when I would talk to the donor families, I would just say, you can do nothing. You can leave them on the ventilator. You can donate their organs, but whatever decision fits your soul, that's the right decision for you and your family. So
Wow.
the ethnicity is big, and they're actually nationally right now redoing some metrics on how they allocate in organs because of some of the original, like this person gets this and that person gets that, was flawed. So there's a lot of digging today in making sure that they understand what are the co-contributors drivers of the diseases and how the allocation system works in the United States. There is a great organization, United Network for Organ Sharing, UNOS, and there's a huge website, and anybody and everybody can go on there and say, look at it. You can say, look down the street, has your program got good results or not? You can really, it's all transparent now, and it's important, because if you're going to have to go through something like that, you want to go to a program where the results are good, regardless of your, you know, your color, race, creed, doesn't matter. So it's a good question, and it is still a challenge.
And again, like I said, I encourage people that this is a meat suit. You better try to work on your soul and your heart, okay? And I went ahead and did it. You know, I went ahead and did it. I said, you know, donate it. If it's still good and it can give another person 5-10 years of life, absolutely. And they're willing to, and they're willing to accept it, because, you know, I got some strong DNA. Tell us a great success story. Tell us some of the wonderful things that have happened on the other side of the transplant, because you had some great stories.
My favorite. So when I was at University of Chicago, I was a coordinator. So I had both donor families and recipients I worked with. And I remember we had a living donor, Alverston Connor, God bless her soul, and her son, Melvin. She was African-American, and he donated his kidney to her. He was the sweetest young man. And she was fabulous. I just loved her. And so the best part is, when you're on dialysis or your kidneys are failing, you can't drink very much. You can maybe have, think about it, a cup or two of water. Maybe a day. Think about that. Just a cup. So you can't drink a lot of fluids. You can't eat green leafy vegetables. So you have potassium. You can't eat. One lady killed herself one week because she ate a sweet potato pie, and that's packed with potassium. So your restrictions are like, you got, there's no like, I think I'll do this day. No, it's black, it's white. You get to eat, drink, and do this, and you can't do that. So Alverston gets her kidney. I used to love watching her eat. She actually goes to the floor back then, and people would be bringing macaroni, cheese, collard greens, fried chicken, and all this food. And you just see them, because they get to eat and drink. My one patient, Sophie, when she was fluid restriction, she would stand under the shower and let the water go in and out of her mouth because she couldn't drink it, but she wanted the sensation. That's how it is. These are true stories. So Alverston, one time in Chicago, took me to the south side of Chicago, and you know, I'm this white girl, and she's bringing me into this whole amazing restaurant, and it's just me, and then all these African American people eating good food, and we sat down. Oh man, did she eat. And I ate too, so I'm not going to miss a meal. And she, I mean, it just brought me such joy to see her. And I think I told you before that I think I was the only white person in Ebony magazine back then, because they covered her. They had her because she was sitting behind her son, who was on a motorcycle. And then they did a whole expose of her and him. And, you know, it's just the joy. And, you know, when you see these people, like, you know, sometimes people say, oh, I don't want to celebrate my birthday. I'm not going to do that. You know what? I celebrate every birthday. Here's people who just want to get another day. They just want to breathe. They just want to be able to live to the maybe of maybe I'll get the call, maybe I'll get the transplant. It's true. And the wait list is huge in the United States. Waiting, maybe, if they get a call, and maybe they get to celebrate another day, or they can breathe again when they get a lung transplant, or their liver's going to work again, and they're not yellow, and they don't feel horrible. So, you know, the reality of all of it, and even if people watch the Rose Bowl parade every year, there's a flotilla. I went down one year, and they have a picture of the donor, because everything has to be made in flowers, next to the person who got it. It's called Donate Life Float, and if you ever watch the Rose Bowl, you'll see it. I mean, I went down, I just cried the whole time. Because, like you, I'm a marshmallow too, I was called to this work, and I just showed up and did the work, and I guess I was graced with a lot of blessings to do it. But these parents and families actually go every year who've lost loved ones, because it's their pilgrimage, like from Wisconsin and Minnesota and Chicago, to go to the Rose Bowl to make these flowers for this float, because it gives them peace. So
I worked on a float one time. It was overrated, Brains. I'm gonna tell you, in my opinion, the float is beautiful, but it is work. You got to pick each petal off. You got to glue each petal on. It is a labor of love. So when you said that, I was like, I had a flashback. I didn't last very long. The emotional attachment. I've seen this happen. I've got a friend right now that's waiting for a kidney, and so their partner is going to donate their kidney. And I guess there might be already a kidney that is a perfect match in the bank that they would be able to use. And then they would take the kidney that's donated and replace that for someone else. So there are options. But, you know, when you give someone the gift of life, it's a whole, for lack of a better term, there's some strings attached emotionally. I mean, yeah, I would think. Two friends, husband, wife, brother, sister, you know, and then as time goes on, they move apart. They have their own destiny, they have their own life. They will always appreciate what that person has given them. But I think in my mind, subconsciously, there might be a sense of obligation or you owe me because I gave you this. And then when you grow apart, there is a hurt, there's a disdain. I don't know if I would say it's a regret, but there is an emotional attachment for that. Is there a lot of psychological conditioning and coordinating before and after? Because it's an emotional trip,
Oh,
absolutely.
heavy duty, April. There's no question. So what, yes, there is, to answer your question. There's a social worker who actually works with the potential, the recipient. But then there's a separate person called an independent living donor advocate, if it's a living donor. This person's job is just to work with the living donors. And I actually had my best friend, her brother needed a kidney. And of course, initially, everyone's like, I'll donate it. And she called me and she said, I said, yes, but no, I love him, but I said, here's the thing that happened.
Right. You can't not second guess it.
The independent living donor advocate, which is usually a social worker, talks to the donor because sometimes families pressure and go, some families came in, the daughter was going to donate, and that's what the parents told her to her brother because the boy was considered the more important person in the family. But the living donor advocate can suss that out. And if, even if she would have been a good donor, psychologically, you can tell if someone's being pressured or just isn't right, it's not going to end well, then they rule that donor out. They just said this is not going to work out. They don't have to tell the recipient anything because it's none of their business, the potential recipient. And that way you save the donor face and them, and you also, the recipient has to wait. Like your friend, sounds like they were doing a paired exchange. Called a paired exchange, meaning that maybe their loved one's kidney didn't match them, but their loved one's kidney matched another recipient. So you can do like a crisscross, right? It's called paired exchange. And we've done up to 18, an 18 chain that starts like that across the country. That you
Wow.
take kidney out here, and then that one goes in here, and then this one goes here, and then that one goes there. It's very cool. It's really was. Really, and it came from a man who was a computer wizard, and his daughter needed his kidney, and he realized that worked up and it didn't match. He goes, it's got to be something else. It's got to be something. And he created a computerized matching system that people use to this day. And so, to your point, yes, there is emotional attachment, and they are vetted, and they see the social worker. And even after all that's vetted and it's a go and good, some, you know, people sometimes. It's not a small task to donate a kidney or a part
Oh,
of the
I can even imagine, you know, what they're going through. Even bone marrow, you know.
Yeah. And, but the good news with it now is it's all done laparoscopically. You
Right.
can take the kidney out laparoscopically, thank goodness, because the old-fashioned way was brutal. So that's good news. Now, the liver is different. But the technology has evolved such that it's not as invasive when you donate a kidney as it used to be. But yeah, and you know, we have patients who come to clinic and go, I hated tomatoes. I got my kidney and I can't get enough of them. Do you think my donor liked tomatoes? And then also, at least here, and I think in many parts of the country, they have an annual event in Northern California where if the donor family wants to meet the recipient and they talk to the social
Oh,
worker,
wow.
they meet. And I went to that one, and you walk in and they give you a box of Kleenex because there's no way you're not going to be stopping. To watch that is amazing. Talk about, oh my God, real life, death, love, compassion. I mean, yeah. So they do vet both the donor and the recipient, donor family recipient, because they don't want to attach them to each other if one's going to live vicariously through. So on
They're
YouTube.
not like some of these sperm donors that have like 50 kids. Just go,
Oh,
well, I got some organs for sale. You want to do this? You want to do that? Also, the call for it though. I really encourage people that if this is something that has been on your heart, go in, go to some of the information that we're going to provide at the back end of this interview and research it. See if this is something that is for you because you can save a life. You can be an impactor. So you took it all this information and thought about some of the people that really got on your nerves at work and you killed them and donated their organs and wrote us a story about it. Tell us a little bit about that. That's pretty interesting.
yeah, it was very cathartic. I just wished I'd thought about it while I was working. Because when you're working and you're a professional and you got to behave yourself, and people say stuff to you, and you're like, wow, and you want to say something, but you can't because you got to be a professional, right? So there was some of those. So it's funny because in the second book I wrote, which is about kidney match, which is about kidney transplants, paired exchange, all the stuff we were just talking about. I killed her so bad in the first.
I don't
And
mean to laugh, but it's funny.
I hands were going faster than my brain because I was like, oh, I really didn't like her. She was just a wuss. Dead. And I got her liver, kidneys, her heart. I mean, fictionally, I didn't kill her for I know what happens to donors. So I don't have to worry when I'm a mystery writer. I don't have to worry about the bullet splatter, all that kind of stuff. I already know how to kill them without a whole lot of blood. So my books aren't bloody at all. My books are kind of based on the things that are my passions. Best friends, which I've had some since kindergarten that I still see in nursing school. Transplant, which has been a passion. And just, some fun. I got these two girlfriends who are best friends. So there is some drinking and there's some swearing and there's a little bit of sex, not gratuitous, but people do have sex in the world. So whenever I do a book interview, I always say there's these three things. And if you don't like swears, because one of my characters, she used the F-bomb. I tried to shut her up, but when you're a writer, they're not going to, not all the time.
And that's what we are enthralled by is that that you're able to use your words, your passion, your experience, and bring it to life. I can't wait. Are they audible as well? Do you have Audible?
They're on every Audible vendor.
I gotta get one. I gotta get one. I'm gotta go right after we finish this and get one because I'm excited to hear about it. I think it'd be
Who narrates? I got to hire the actor. She's from the Midwest. She's got it down. And people who read them say, I really love Jackie and Sarah. I wish I could hang around with them because they get in some trouble. Okay. I'm not going to lie. And they do stuff I wouldn't have done, but they're doing it. They're the characters. I mean, I was sometimes just sitting as a scribe writing away because they were taken off in places I never even heard of. So I do my research and all that, of course. But what they've said about my books is I give you a real peek behind the curtain of transplant because my goal was to be 150% accurate with the transplant stuff and then make up the characters and the scenes and the places and all that, which I did. And so that was a good. So it's completely like I even had the chair of the Department of Surgery, Nancy Asher, Dr. Roberts, who was chief of transplant. I had them read it because I knew they'd tell me straight up there was even a little hair out of place there because I'm committed to accuracy and all that. So you get the real deal, but then you go on a fun ride with these characters, and they take you everywhere. You go to Cuba, you go to Miami, Chicago, you know, you go to some places. You get to travel a little. Of course, there's food. It's got to be food.
Exactly. So where do you see that going? Are you going to continue to write that, or are you going to have a stage play? This would be like a kooky Netflix series. I would love to see that. Pitch it to them, because I'm a binger, honey.
At some point, I am going to, because people keep saying this. I'm a visual
learner. So different. Yeah, it's so different.
Visual writer. So when I write, you see it, you feel it, you hear it, you taste it, because that's how I show up. So I do think one of my colleagues, Dr. Nancy Asher, she's on Netflix. You should check it out. It's called The Surgeon's Cut. Surgeon's Cut on Netflix, and look up with Dr. Asher, Dr. Nancy Asher. You follow her and her husband and watch and hear them during a living liver transplant. And you do get like the bird's eye view on that. But I think my series at some point, my dream, my manifestation is that it gets picked up by either Hulu, Netflix, I don't care who, and they make it into a series. And of course, in my head, Jackie Larson would be played by Melissa McCarthy, because that's who I think of as my character. Like, I cast my characters as if it's a movie. I cut out pictures. I have a picture board. And then I have it in my room when I'm writing. And, you know, so yeah. So my dream is that I'll get a call one day. Hi, it's Melissa McCarthy's agent. Are you available? And I'll probably fall off the floor screaming. And they go, you're damn right I'm available.
That's right.
That's the dream. That's a dream.
Well, it's, you know what? It's all about a thought. The thought is the energy. And yes. You just put it out there. And I can see it, because it is so unique. It's not the typical, you know, hospital show that's out there, or the friendship, or, you know, it's the backstory behind it. Let's ask you some fun questions real quick. Nurse Amy Peel.
Yes.
If you were an appliance in the kitchen of all places, what appliance would you be and why?
Oh, man, that's a good question, because I'm not really a cook. But I think if I were an appliance, the thing that I liked a lot is that, what's that fancy blender we have downstairs? You can make anything in it.
A Vitamix.
I would be a Vitamix.
Would you be
a Vitamix, because I think you can do almost anything in there. You can make soup, your drinks, you can do anything. It chops the crap out of everything you put in it. So I'm going to go with Vitamix.
Yeah. I think I want to be the, let's see, because I usually kind of go back and forth, but I think I want to be the steamer.
Oh.
I want to be the vegetable steamer.
Yeah.
You can just make it as tender, as crispy as you want. You still hold vitamins and minerals, and you still... you can use the broth. So it's got a lot of different components to it outside of just the normal, you know, just steam me some carrots. I think I'd be the steamer this time. Plus, I like it kind of hot and smoky. If you could time travel, go back to the past, project to the future, stay in the present, where would you land?
I'm always drawn to those 1950 movies with Studebaker, old cars, and clothes. You got to wear that corset, though, and girdles. I'd rather not wear the girdle. But I love the clothes. Just the way that women always go out with the long gloves on and hats. And, you know, maybe be a debutante with a fabulous gown on and just, you know, I wouldn't mind the long, I don't smoke, but I would go with the long cigarette holder.
Oh, yeah. The look.
Why not, right? And just kind of like that, I just love that era in the 1950s. You know, I mean, I love living now because we get to dress comfortably. But in my head, I think that I just love like watching that era. And just
Not me. I'm going straight to 3000. I'm futuristic. I've lived it, done that, seen it. I got pictures of it. I don't want to do that. I want to see what is ahead. I want to see how we have progressed. I want to see how we have evolved as people, what technology is, what AI has created. I'm a futuristic kind of girl. I've always been a space cadet, so I like that. If you were a car, what kind of car would you be?
I got an electric car now, and it's really cool. So I think I'm gonna go with the electric car because it's super cool.
Yeah.
We are in a spaceship, I'm not gonna lie. And it doesn't suck the gas out of this world. I haven't been to a gas station in 2.5 years. And I would hope my car would kind of in the future be able to fly a little bit too, like the Jetsons, you know?
Absolutely.
Why not? And
You can fly up and meet me. Now, see, now this is where I would regress. I want to be a 1974 VW van. Oh yes. I want to paint it with the flowers on it. Open it up. You got a mattress. You got a big fine man laying up in there. You got a hookah pipe. You are smoking some unmentionables, you just are just free and easy. I just would love to be an old VW van. That would just do my heart.
that. I love that.
If you had a conversation with a 25-year-old Amy Peel, what would you say to her?
Well, I really went for it when I was young. I had a blast. God, I mean, I really was working hard, having a good time when I wasn't traveling. I just say it's going to be okay. Be courageous. Say yes more than you say no. And yeah, I've collected friends my whole life from every facet, and I still have them in my life. So just, yeah, say yes. And take time to be grateful and enjoy and love yourself as you are every minute, not like you want to be. Like, oh, if I was skinnier, if I could wear this, or just love your body up the way it is this very second, every moment, and don't judge yourself and don't judge other people. Because I think for me, I used to think, oh, I'm overweight, oh, I'm fat, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? My body works and everything works. Thank you, God. And I think just stop judging yourself and just be who you are and live and try to stay present because that's how the ride goes. That's the fun ride. And then sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's sad, sometimes it's fun. Sometimes I don't think I've ever been bored a minute in my life. But
Right.
yeah, I'd say that, yeah, you do you, girl, as my daughter says now. I have a daughter, Tracy, who's 36, and son Bennett, 34. Mom, you just do you. And the first time she told me this years ago, I'm like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm just gonna do me. I don't care what people want. You know what? And if I'm 25, I would say, don't worry what people think. They're going to think whatever they think. It's none of your business what they think. You just do you. That's what I would tell her.
Absolutely. Well, bravo. You had a glimpse of, you told me you had a little medical procedure there when you were on your vacation here in Switzerland. What did you kind of notice just on the surface? I mean, was it their technology, their level of commitment, portability? What was it about them? Because so many people tell me, if you've got the money and you can afford to do some experimental treatment or alternative treatments in your healthcare, Switzerland is the place to go. What did you kind of notice just on the surface?
Surface is that it's super efficient. We're waiting in line with the rest of the people from Switzerland, and you go to the clinic and you walk through the window and they got it all down pat. And then I said, oh, my tooth is just, well, the nerve died, but it was hurting bad before that. And my mouth was sore. Oh, go to the third floor, like you're Macy's, right? Go to the third floor, there's a dentist office. I walk in, super kind, super clean. I said, I'm here, I have a tooth problem. And they're like, oh, we can get you in 30 minutes. So I get the doctor, I'm in the room, immaculately clean, like the equipment was, like being on a Star Wars, Star Trek ship. And okay, we're going to do the x-ray. And it was like, no, da, 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 da. Here's the picture. He spoke fluent English. He also speaks German. He was from Germany. He lives in Switzerland now. And he just explained the whole thing to me. And I said, okay, let's get her done. I needed a root canal. Now, it's not what I would prefer to bring. And at the end of the day, it was $300. And here it's like 2 grand. I mean, so you could take some money and get a round trip ticket and still get some good health care and still probably have money in your pocket if you did that. But that place is like, it's not cheap for like food and whatever. Immaculately clean. The food is amazing. So, and the people were just, you know, super smart and just like get it done. It was a real, it was cool. And they gave me discharge notes, told me what to, sent me the x-ray, emailed it to me. So when I come home, I can send, show it to the dentist. I mean, soup to nuts. I was in there probably an hour, hour and a half, but with the wait.
That's
So,
what happened to me when I went to China. Mine was a little bit different. Mine was a spiritual quest. And my driver told me that it was on my itinerary that I needed to go to the clinic. And I was like, go to the clinic? Is you crazy? I don't have no insurance over here. You're not going to use me for no lab rat. But I went there. It was immaculate. It was clean. It was just cutting edge. And it was non-invasive. He checked my liver, my kidney, and my spleen, looked at my tongue, looked in my eyes. Told me my past life, my present life, and my future. Did not even take a vial of blood. And everything that he has told me, I wrote it down, has come to fruition. So, brains, you hear all of this stuff on mainstream media about third world countries or other countries that do this and do that. Oh no, we could take some notes because anytime you raise someone's insulin for something that they need on a daily basis, to $1,500, and we can't put a cap on that. It seems like we're being railroaded. We're being railroaded, and so you want to definitely consider that. In closing, you have done so many amazing things in your life. You touched and changed and enhanced. Yes, and get your flowers for all of that. So many people's lives. What would you like your legacy to be? How do you want to be remembered?
to be remembered as a, well, a funny, compassionate, kind human, and who followed her passion, because I ended up, you know, I think told you, go to the Chopra Center. I'm a yoga teacher now. I work at a retirement center with some people who I love. I got certified to teach laughter yoga and hatha yoga, and I do a combo platter that I love it. And the people that I teach, it's like I love doing it and they love receiving it. So I think for me, just someone who followed her passion, even though sometimes the roads weren't like on everyone else's roads. And that I had hope and I surrounded myself with caring, loving people, and I knew how to ask for help. And I also surrounded myself with a lot of people who could love me up and hold me. Sometimes you need that. So I don't know if that all summarizes into a big old bundle,
No,
but
that's beautiful. That's it, because I can see that and so much more. So much more. Such a contributor to humanity and to society.
April,
That's
one
what it's all about.
where we sign off is I end up doing a book club about 3 or 4 months ago in San Jose, which is quite a drive in traffic from where I live. And I'm driving there thinking, what was I thinking? But I agreed to do it and showed up. And I didn't, you know, not a big morning person early on, but it was an 8 o'clock talk and it's at this group of women. And so I just said, best foot forward. And I show up, the room is packed. They bought every book I brought. And then they asked me, it's called the General Women's GW Foundation of Clubs. There's 60,000 women in the United States and Europe. This was their club in San Jose. And they have been in existence way before because women weren't allowed to go to libraries and read and do the things that we all love to do because we're humans. And now they asked me to be their honorary chairperson for 2 years. That starts next year. And I'll be doing webinars and writing articles and just interacting with this group of women who are like last year, they picked one project a year. It was human trafficking. They educate themselves, they raise money for it. They're focused. And again, it's because I followed my passion. I'd written these books. They like books. They eat them, like, you know, 100 a year, some of these read. And it's just like, again, like you were saying before, I showed up with what I have and who I am. And they, I'm like so honored to be part of this group and to start, you know, sharing things with them and writing articles and speaking. So
we'll definitely post them. And when you post things, we will definitely share it to our audience because we want to do that. We want to have some good news.
Yes.
Women are on fire, you know, especially here in the United States. I'm telling you, we are on fire. We haven't had this much momentum since we burned our bras.
Right. That's right. I even went to the march, the Women's March in D.C. And I got to tell you, a million plus, I wasn't nervous, scared. I mean, it was the most beautiful experience, I think, and not any violence, not any. I mean, it was, you're right, we are on fire and you do not want to be messing with us.
No, you don't want to be messing with us, and you don't want to be messing with our uterus, okay? So we just going to wait and see how all this pans out, one way or another. God is good, and as long as we are faithful servants and each one teach one, if each one takes personal responsibility for your own stuff, okay? Show up the right way. You know right from wrong. Donate your heart, your kidney, your lung, your spirit, your goodwill, your finances. We're going to be all right. We're going to be all right. Tell my brains how to get a copy of the book and how to follow you, Amy S. Peel.
Now listen, this here, April Mahoney, just go to my website. It's www, as you guessed, Amy, A-M-Y, S as in Sam, Peel, P-E-E-L-E, like a banana peel with an E at the end. So Amy S. Peel, altogether.com. You will find more than anything you want, and even my memoir is on there, and that's a whole other story, but you might want to take a look at that. It's called Aunt Mary's Guide to Raising Children the Old-Fashioned Way. And that is, yeah, my great Aunt Mary had a brothel during the Depression.
Woo-wee! I ain't mad at Aunt Mary.
Aunt Mary is something else, man. But anyway, go to my website, and I'm on Instagram, and I'm on Facebook. So just go to my website and you'll get everything you need and more. And you can even read a sample of my chapters if you want to see, oh, it's not right for me or it is right. And I love book clubs, April. So if anyone ever reads a book and wants me to come, I love them.
Okay. All right. Well, we're definitely going to put that out in full force. Thank you. I just hope I get an opportunity to meet you. You know, either I come up that way or you come down this way. I really believe that we would have a great conversation and we'd have a lot of fun. Again, I want to give you your flowers for your dedication and for your love, because being a nurse is not for chumps.
Oh, no.
It's not for chumps. And to do that, but then also to take it to another level, to save lives, give lives, and, you know, just be there and support our families. Thank you so much, Amy Peel. Brains, I need you to peel back the layers of your mind and go in there and see what you can do to be a better human being. If it is not, you know, organ donation is not your PB&J, if reading is not your PB&J, find something that is in alignment with what you do based upon this conversation, because it was very laid and very textured. I need you to go in, love, like, share, and subscribe to both me and Amy's pages. Love, like, share, and subscribe. Don't be afraid. Consider it. There are options out there for people. We will put all the information for people that are interested in finding out more about organ transplant and organ donations. All right? Thank you so much, Amy. You are the best.
Thank you, April. It was so much fun. And I hope we get to meet in person someday.
We are going to. We're going to make it a point. Yeah. Bye, brains.